The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, and welcome to That's a Laugh. I'm Sharon Silcox with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Dave Barry always has the funniest problems. Let's join him as he reports on that traditional holiday menace, the Christmas tree. This article appeared in the Seattle Times newspaper on Monday, December 7th, 1992. 'Tis the season to be extremely wary. 'Tis the holiday season, a time when writers openly use words like 'tis and even 'twas, a time when throngs of excited parents bustle into the Toys Sure Are Costing You Plenty store and club each other with sturdy Tonka trucks in fierce holiday struggles over who gets to purchase the only remaining unit of the toy industry's hottest new product concept, Baby Festerface, the doll that develops real balls. A time when festive gatherings of loud eggnog-impaired people attempt to sing the 12 Days of Christmas despite the fact that nobody ever remembers what my true love gave me after day five. Drummers milking, eight leapers leaping, seven figgy pudding, six snakes a-molting, yes. The holiday season is a time of traditions. And here in the newspaper industry, we have a cherished tradition of reminding you, the public, of all the holiday-related ways in which you can get injured or killed. We also perform this service for you on Memorial Day, the 4th of July, Labor Day, Halloween, and Thanksgiving. Enjoy your turkey dinner, but remember, this year, 250 Americans will choke on their giblets. So, today, I want to discuss a potential holiday disaster that was brought to my attention by alert reader Debbie Denniston, who sent me an Associated Press article that appeared last December in the Albany, New York Times Union. The article, which I am not making up, begins. Fremont, Nebraska. A 10-year-old boy trying to keep his dog from throwing up on a rug was pinned when the family Christmas tree fell on top of him. This incident should come as no surprise to anybody who has ever owned a dog. Throwing up on rugs is the primary function of dogs as a species. If you were to put a dog in the middle of the Sahara, the dog would immediately start trotting in a straight, purposeful line, and it would continue night and day, traveling thousands of miles if necessary, defying exhaustion, starvation, and thirst, until it located a rug, which it would throw up on. So, anyway, when this Fremont, Nebraska dog, whose name, according to the article, is Pookie, started to woof, the boy shoved him off the rug. Naturally, this caused the Christmas tree to fall. Christmas trees have some kind of inner ear problem that renders them incapable of standing erect for any significant length of time. In their natural forest environment, they grow horizontally on the ground like zucchini. Compounding the problem is the fact that Christmas trees are known to be among the most vicious members of the plant community. They become especially hostile after they've spent weeks tied up tightly at the Christmas tree sales lot, while holiday shoppers repeatedly lift them up and pound them down to see if any needles fall off. So, when Dad brings a tree home, cuts its ropes and tries to jam it into one of those ludicrously flimsy ashtray-sized tree stands, which are barely adequate to handle a small floral centerpiece, let alone an enraged, full-grown conifer, the tree, freed from its main restraining ropes, will immediately start lunging violently in all directions, while Mom, trying to be helpful, says, okay, now it's leaning to the left. Okay, now it's leaning to the right. Okay, now it's leaning back to the left. Okay, now it's... Meanwhile, Dad, somewhere down on the floor under the thrashing branches, pine sap smeared in his hair, is fighting for his life, bleeding from hundreds of tiny pine needle stab wounds and saying many non-holiday words. At least that's the tradition in our house. But getting back to the Associated Press article, there the boy was, alone in his house, trapped under a highly aggressive Christmas tree. Fortunately, Pookie saw what was happening, trotted alertly over to the boy, and, in the heroic tradition of resourceful canines, Lassie and Rin Tin Tin, threw up. No, seriously. The article states that the boy was able to reach a phone and call 911, whereupon police and firefighters pulled the tree off the boy, who was not injured. The article does not state whether the police used tranquilizer darts on the tree. So, fortunately, this story has a happy ending, which is good, because the holiday season should be a happy time. So, before we create the impression that there's nothing more to this very, very special time of year than tree attacks, we'd like to wish you the best and leave you with this holiday thought. Both holly and mistletoe are poisonous. Cookies are a major part of the holiday season. Bill Lepp, American storyteller and five-time winner of the West Virginia State Liars Contest, has some great advice on the subject of cookies. This story appears in his book, Muddling Through, Perspectives on Parenting, published in 2012. About having fun, cookie cutters. Last Christmas, I told the kids to head to the kitchen. It was time to make sugar cookies. I like to make sugar cookies because they are easy and delicious. You mix the ingredients, put them in the fridge for a few hours, roll them out, cut them into shapes, and decorate them. I have very few rules for the sugar cookie making process. No matter the season, I get out all the cookie cutters. My goal in making the sugar cookies is to have fun and let the kids express their creativity. If they want to make a green and red jack-o'-lantern at Christmas, that's fine by me. Mutant Ninja Star of David, I love it. Vampire Santa, let it roll. Again, my object here is to have fun. Oh, and to get cookies. When we make cookies, I keep in mind that we are not making these cookies to give to the wise men to give to Jesus. We are not making them for the queen. We are making them to have fun. So it does not matter how they turn out. There is enough work involved in making sugar cookies that everyone has something to do. But sugar cookies are simple enough that no one person has too much to do unless that one person is stuck cleaning up the mess. Speaking of mess, making cookies is sometimes the thing we do when mom is otherwise engaged. It isn't that we don't want mom to help make cookies. It's just that it's easier to manage the mess without mom's help. This past Christmas, my kids and I whipped up, chilled, and rolled out the dough. That could be a hip-hop song, same as ever. By the way, rolling out the dough is the hardest part of the whole process. I suggest you lay some parchment paper on the table and spread a bit of flour before you start to roll. If worse comes to worst and you can't get the cut dough off the table, you can just lift up the parchment paper onto the cookie sheet and cook the cookies on the paper. Keep all water away from the rolling pin, though. A little water on the rolling pin means sticky, sticky dough. We had, of course, quite an array of cookie cutters. My daughter was focusing on Santa shapes and Christmas trees. My daughter likes to bake more than my son does. This is not a sexist comment or a political stance. It's just a fact. My son is older, and I introduced him to making cookies before my daughter was ever born, but he hasn't taken to it like she has. My daughter has an artistic flair, and she greatly enjoys the decorating process. She will spend hours carefully administering colored sugar so that her Santa ends up wearing tartan sweaters, argyle socks, and plaid toy bags. She will separate the colored sprinkles to make sure her Christmas trees are top of the line. My son was cutting out dozens of little stars and arranging them in a careful pattern on the cookie sheet. "What's that?" I asked. "Orion, Taurus, and the Pleiades," he said. Duh. This past year, I decided to introduce icing into the whole process. I bought a tub of standard white icing. We stirred some sugar into the icing so that it glittered like real ice on the edges of our trees and on our snowmen. My daughter asked, "Can we add food coloring to this?" Here is another reason it is sometimes best to make cookies when mom is otherwise occupied. Kids and dads sometimes have good ideas, which moms might frown on if they are forewarned. As soon as my daughter asked about food coloring, all three of us began to chuckle. When mom came to see how we were doing, she was greeted by an army of glittering, icing, smothered yellow snowmen. Delicious. The thing about fun is that it is supposed to be fun. One reason I like making cookies is because there are no serious consequences if the process goes wrong or the cookies don't turn out just right. We are not baking cookies to win a prize. We are baking cookies to spend time together. This is an important aspect to keep in mind when you are having fun. This is why I get out all the cookie cutters and let the kids make what they want to make. If they want to make a shape for which we have no cutter, I give them a knife. It's never too early to introduce cutlery into your child's playtime. Well, maybe that's not completely true, but you know what I mean. I want them to have the power to express their creative sides and their senses of humor. That's what the cookie process is all about. The cookie baking process is also about teaching the kids about the kitchen, but I don't mention that to them. I am not a chef, but I can cook the basics. A good way to learn your way around the kitchen is to do something like baking cookies. It is an entertaining way to learn. If you take your kids on a tour of the kitchen, here's the stove, this is how you turn it on, this is a cookie sheet, this is the flour, but that is boring and probably won't stick. If you are cooking in the kitchen, then your kids are learning at least some survival skills. Imagine yourself saying to the kids, "You never know when you might end up stranded, alone, on a desert island with a full kitchen and a stocked pantry. You best know something about cooking so you don't starve." If you're a parent, then you have likely been angry with your children at some point in your parenting career. Having fun isn't about not getting angry. We often get all wrapped up in the right and wrong way to do things, and thus we forget the fun way. We get all goal-oriented. You don't always need to be goal-oriented when you are having fun. Let the goal to which you are oriented be having fun. Drop the whole concept of good cookies or correctly decorated cookies and let loose. Take a deep breath and just adjust. Drop the dough, make some more, or just scrape off the part that hit the floor. Burn the cookies? Oh, well. Got food coloring on your clothes? You shouldn't be wearing your good clothes to begin with. Don't forget, you still have to wash the dishes from the cookie baking, clean the table, sweep the floor, and put all the decorations away. But look at those smiles. A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens is one of the most well-known stories of all times, and it's one of my absolute favorites. I'd like to share stave 5 with you. Scrooge has encountered Marley's ghost and the spirits of Christmas past, present, and future, and is just waking up on Christmas morning. Stave 5, the end of it. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all the time before him was his own to make amends in. "I will live in the past, the present, and the future," Scrooge repeated as he scrambled out of bed. "The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees." He was so flustered and so glowing with his good intentions that his broken voice would scarcely answer to his call. He had been sobbing violently in his conflict with the spirit, and his face was wet with tears. "They are not torn down," cried Scrooge, folding one of his bed curtains in his arms. "They are not torn down, rings and all. They are here. I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will." His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, mislaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance. "I don't know what to do," cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath, and making a perfect Laocoon of himself with his stockings. "I am as light as a feather. I am as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hello there. Whoop, hello." He had frisked into the sitting room and was now standing there perfectly winded. "There's the saucepan with the gruel was in," cried Scrooge, starting off again and frisking round the fireplace. "There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner where the ghost of Christmas Present sat. There's the window where I saw the wandering spirits. It's all right. It's all true. It all happened. Ha, ha, ha." Really, for a man who had been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh, a most illustrious laugh, the father of a long, long line of brilliant laughs. "I don't know what day of the month it is," said Scrooge. "I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. Never mind, I don't care. I'd rather be a baby. Hello, whoop, hello here." He was checked in his transports by the churches ringing out the lustiest peals he had ever heard. Clash, clang, hammer, ding, dong, bell, bell, dong, ding, hammer, clang, clash. Oh, glorious, glorious. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist. Clear, bright, jovial, stirring cold, cold. Piping for the blood to dance in, golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet fresh air, merry bells, oh, glorious, glorious. "What's today?" cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes, who perhaps had loitered in to look about him. "Eh?" returned the boy, with all his might of wonder. "What's today, my fine fellow?" said Scrooge. "Today?" replied the boy. "Why, Christmas Day." "It's Christmas Day," said Scrooge to himself. "I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Pugh, they can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow." "Hello," returned the boy. "Do you know the poulterers in the next street but one, at the corner?" Scrooge inquired. "I should hope I did," replied the lad. "An intelligent boy," said Scrooge. "A remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one?" "What, the one as big as me?" returned the boy. "What a delightful boy," said Scrooge. "It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, my buck." "It's hanging there now," replied the boy. "Is it?" said Scrooge. "Go and buy it." "Walker!" exclaimed the boy. "No, no," said Scrooge. "I am in earnest. Go and buy it, and tell them to bring it here, that I may give them the directions to where to take it. Come back with the man, and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes, and I'll give you half a crown." The boy was off like a shot. He must have had a steady hand at a trigger, who could have got a shot off half so fast. "I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's," whispered Scrooge, rubbing his hands and splitting with a laugh. "He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Joan Miller never made such a joke as sending it to Bob's will be." The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one, but write it he did somehow, and went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the coming of the poulterer's man. As he stood there, waiting his arrival, the knocker caught his eye. "I shall love it as long as I live," cried Scrooge, patting it with his hand. "I scarcely ever looked at it before. What an honest expression it has in its face. It's a wonderful knocker. Here's the turkey. Hello, whoop, how are you? Merry Christmas." It was a turkey. He could never have stood upon his legs, that bird. He would have snapped them off short in a minute, like sticks of sealing wax. "Why, it's impossible to carry that to Camden Town," said Scrooge. "You must have a cab." The chuckle with which he said this, and the chuckle with which he paid for the turkey, and the chuckle with which he paid for the cab, and the chuckle with which he recompensed the boy, were only to be exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down breathless in his chair again and chuckled till he cried. Shaving was not an easy task, for his hand continued to shake very much, and shaving requires attention, even when you don't dance while you are at it. But if he had cut the end off of his nose, he would have put a piece of sticking plaster over it and been quite satisfied. He dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth, as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas Present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded everyone with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant, in a word, that three or four good-humored fellows said, "Good morning, sir. A Merry Christmas to you." and Scrooge often said afterwards that of all the blithe sounds he had ever heard, those were the blithest in his ears. He had not gone far when, coming on towards him, he beheld the portly gentleman who had walked into his counting-house the day before and said, "Scrooge and Marley's, I believe?" It sent a pang across his heart to think how this old gentleman would look upon him when they met. But he knew what path lay straight before him, and he took it. "My dear sir," said Scrooge, quickening his place, and taking the old gentleman by both hands, "how do you do? I hope you succeeded yesterday. It was very kind of you. A Merry Christmas to you, sir." "Mr. Scrooge?" "Yes," said Scrooge. "That is my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon. And will you have the goodness?" Here Scrooge whispered in his ear. "Lord bless me," cried the gentleman, as if his breath were gone. "My dear Mr. Scrooge, are you serious?" "If you please," said Scrooge, "not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. Will you do me that favor?" "My dear sir," said the other, shaking hands with him, "I don't know what to say to such munificent—" "Don't say anything, please," retorted Scrooge. "Come and see me. Will you come and see me?" "I will," cried the old gentleman, and it was clear he meant to do it. "Thank you," said Scrooge. "I am much obliged to you. I thank you 50 times. Bless you." He went to church and walked about the streets and watched the people hurrying to and fro and patted children on the head and questioned beggars and looked down into the kitchens of houses and up to the windows and found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything, could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock, but he made a dash and did it. "Is your master at home, my dear?" said Scrooge to the girl. "Nice girl, very." "Yes, sir." "Where is he, my love?" said Scrooge. "He's in the dining room, sir, along with mistress. I'll show you upstairs, if you please." "Thank ye, he knows me," said Scrooge, with his hand already on the dining room lock. "I'll go in here, my dear." He turned it gently and sidled his face in, round the door. They were looking at the table, which was spread out in great array, for these young housekeepers are always nervous on such points and like to see that everything is right. "Fred," said Scrooge. Dear heart alive, how his niece by marriage started. Scrooge had forgotten, for the moment, about her sitting in the corner with the footstool, or he wouldn't have done it on any account. "Why, bless my soul," cried Fred. "Who's that?" "It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I have come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?" "Let him in? It is a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Nothing could be heartier. His niece looked just the same. So did Topper when he came. So did the plump sister when she came. So did everyone when they came. Wonderful party. Wonderful games. Wonderful unanimity. Wonderful happiness." But he was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he had set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. 1:15. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come into the tank. His hat was off before he opened the door, his comforter too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock. "Hello," growled Scrooge in his accustomed voice, as near as he could feign it. "What do you mean by coming in here at this time of day?" "I'm very sorry, sir," said Bob. "I am behind my time." "You are," repeated Scrooge. "Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please." "It's only once a year, sir," pleaded Bob, appearing from the tank. "It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir." "Now I'll tell you what, my friend," said Scrooge. "I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore," he continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that he staggered back into the tank again, "and therefore I am about to raise your salary." Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it, holding him, and calling to the people in the court for help in a strait waistcoat. "A Merry Christmas, Bob," said Scrooge, with an earnestness that could not be mistaken, as he clapped him on the back. "A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit." Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived on the total abstinence principle ever afterwards, and it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, every one. And to wrap up this show, I have a few poems from Christmas Unwrapped by Scott Emmons. Merry Christmas! I've seen some frightful Christmas scenes, ornaments and smithereens, needles scattered wall to wall, tinsel trailing down the hall, angels fallen from their heights, knotted up cords and shattered lights, branches turned to mangled sticks, cats and Christmas trees don't mix. Holiday observance. Observing crowds in shopping malls is more than just a silly game. It offers proof beyond a doubt that no two flakes are quite the same. When it comes to tasteful home decor, the leading experts say a Christmas tree should not stay up much past the end of May. The mall at Christmas. The festive lights are twinkling. The scent of pine is thick. The tiny tots are lining up to visit old Saint Nick. There's a tingling of sleigh bells as a chorus sweetly sings, and if you find a parking spot, an angel gets its wings. With a full heart, I wish you joy this season. From me and all of us at the Triangle Radio Reading Service, may your days be filled with laughter. That's all we have time for today. Join us next month for That's a Laugh. I'm Sharon Silcox with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website at trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you.